Welcome back to Dwayne's World. Great to have your company. What a beautiful snapshot of the real essence of SEN that last hour. Hutchie and Pickers, well done here. And to Hutchie, station owners, always said it's about the community and being relevant in the community, in touch with what really counts in the community, the listeners. And that last hour proved that it is real. To break into the normal programming for an hour and to make one listener on her birthday feel special. Well done to you, Hutchie, for organising that. And well done to you, Hutchie and Pickers, for the hour you put together. Happy birthday, Margaret, of course. And well done to Tim Payne as well, Australian captain, calling through and being part of it. That's one of the reasons I'm proud to work for Hutchie. He really does care. And that last hour was absolutely beautiful. And keep your messages coming through. If you're sending through speckled texts about that last hour, don't be afraid to keep them coming. 0433 98 11 16, because I think we'll take a little screenshot of a lot of those speckled texts and send them to Margaret in Sunbury as well to let her know how much you've enjoyed that last hour as well. So keep your speckled texts coming on the speckle text machine, 0433 98 11 16. Going to talk some more sport very shortly. Richard Bayliss, Optus Director of Sport and presenter at Optus, to talk some EPL and talk some soccer in general, because we've been talking a lot of sport over the course of the last couple of weeks about what's going to be up and running. It was great to chat to Mark Scaife earlier on in the program. Let's find out what the latest is in the soccer world very shortly. Dwayne's World for Robot Building Supplies. They've got it and they deliver. robotbuildingsupplies.com.au. And we're here for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy. And anytime you like, you can give me a call on that Werribee Kia open line, 1300 736 736. Werribee Kia up and running, open for business. You can check out the new car range or take your car in for a service at Werribee Kia. As I mentioned, Richard Bayliss is the Optus Director of Sport, and he's been good enough to join me to talk some round ball. Welcome to you, Richard. Thanks for your time.
No worries, Dwayne. Always a pleasure.
Everyone's passionate about their particular sport they love. Some are passionate about all sports, but those who love soccer have just been desperate to get any soccer that they can watch at the moment. So I'm curious to know how the K-League has been going for you on Optus Sport, because I presume it would have been reasonably popular.
Yeah, I think plenty of people, you know, regardless of what your sport of choice is at the moment, sort of desperate just to watch something live, and certainly having something in the time zone helps. So in terms of the K-League getting underway at the weekend, it was great, hopefully not only for the round ball fans, but those that are just keen to watch something. And you know, with a few Aussies involved, I think it went pretty well. I think the football quality itself is up there, certainly when you look at Asian leagues, compare it to the J-League in Japan and then the A-League, of course, back on our own shores. I think the K-League stacks up pretty well, and the quality in the opening round, even though obviously there was no one in the stands, it's always a bit strange. But they did have crowd noises played over the PA, which is fairly weird. It's an obscure idea, but it sort of seemed to lift it a little bit, and the quality of football maybe was lifted a little bit as well. So yeah, it went well. I think, you know, a lot of people have this option now to, you know, engage with a team, pick a favorite team, maybe one with one of the Aussies playing in it, and see how they go before the rest of the sporting world comes back.
And how is it received in other countries as well? We've got a situation where the NRL looks like being the first major sport to start up here in Australia, and they're hoping to get some cut through around the world on stations around the world that are desperate for professional sport content.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, I think firstly the NRL and then a lot of leagues around the world, regardless of the sport, I think would have been watching South Korea very closely indeed, not just for what happened off the field, probably more so for off, in terms of, you know, coming into stadiums, how they manage the social distancing, you know, the health requirements around the game. Pretty stringent, as you would expect, and South Korea generally has done a pretty good job. So it's one of those scenarios where they've almost earned the right to be first back, in a sense. And, you know, I think a lot of people around the world, just not only given the fact that they wouldn't need something to watch, but also the fact that they want to return their own leagues. I think, you know, a lot of people were really interested. They sold rights deals to something like 20 countries just in the last 2 weeks as well, such as the desperation to get live sport back. So I think in that sense, you know, this is K-League's time to shine, isn't it? They might not have this much notoriety at any other point in their existence after this. So in that sense, they'll make the most of it, and hopefully the fans will enjoy watching something as well.
So piped in crowd sounds, remote commentary, I presume. tell us the other broadcast parameters that were different.
Yeah, that was pretty much the main one. I mean, the K-League actually spun up essentially their own hub, their own facility, which they didn't have before over there in Seoul, which meant that from a centralised facility, they could obviously pump in all the vision and from a centralised place do commentary and also graphics. They scrambled right at the last minute. And, you know, I think anyone watching it probably understood that it was a bit of a scramble. By the end of the weekend, you know, they were firing on all cylinders from over there. And the quality of the broadcast itself, I think, was up there with anything you would expect to see from any other league. So in that sense, they did really well scrambling it, knowing that, you know, the pressure that was on them as well last weekend, given the eyes of the world were keeping an eye on them. I think they did pretty well. And yeah, the pipe didn't sound. I know a lot of people feel a bit weird about it. I didn't necessarily think it would be a great idea before the weekend, but I think all in all, it just added another element to it. And, you know, you saw the players actually, when they would score, they would go over and they would celebrate. They would sort of give a tribute to some of the health workers. And I think everybody really acknowledge the fact that it's different football. I don't think anyone tries to pretend that it's the same as before. It's unique, and hopefully that gives it a real kind of different feel that people can enjoy by the same token.
So what's next? Bundesliga, they're pretty hopeful?
Yeah, Bundesliga is due to start this weekend, which is, hopeful is a really good word actually for it, Dwayne, because they've had players still testing positive, you know, with coronavirus in Germany, again, another country that's handled it really well. So you look at countries like the UK that maybe haven't had the same success, and then Spain and Italy, and you think, how on earth will they get going? But Germany will be a huge test to see what they do. We know the German efficiency will mean that they'll do a pretty good job, you would think, regardless. And then in the UK with the Premier League, this week is pretty much the key week, I think, in terms of all the meetings, the government's involved, you know, the health sector, obviously, and then the PFA with the players and then the clubs as well. There are so many different stakeholders that need to be comfortable with the plan to return. And if they're not, by the end of next week, that could be the end of the Premier League. They could just say, look, let's not even go back to it this season. Let's make it null and void, which obviously Liverpool fans in particular don't want to hear, but that's a reality facing the Premier League and a lot of other leagues around the world too, just given the fact that the situation isn't yet under control.
So it's generally thought that Liverpool won't just be given the title then?
Well, there are a lot of different options that are being talked about in different leagues around the world. You know, League One and League Two in England themselves are big leagues, of course. They have said that they're probably not going to continue, and they'll put in what is a mathematical model to show who the real champions are. The biggest concern, and I don't think there's any real likelihood that they'll just make it completely null and void. They'll end the season and then award it based on, you know, whatever mathematical formula they choose. And regardless of the modelling, of course, Liverpool will be champions because they're so far ahead. But I guess what most people are worried about, particularly if you support Liverpool, is that asterisk, isn't it? You know, alongside Liverpool having won it, there's no doubt they deserve it, and they'll probably go on next season to win it again, such is their quality at the moment. But I think it's that fear factor that, you know, there'll always be that cloud hanging over their success, and it wasn't really earned, even though anyone that's actually watched them play know that it certainly was.
So what's it mean for world football? What does it mean for the Champions League and players moving from one country to the other to play, and teams moving from one country to the other to play in the next 6 months, 12 months?
Yeah, I think this is the real mess, isn't it? I mean, domestic football leagues are one aspect of it. But as soon as, you know, in the Champions League, where you might just cross one border, but you might also cross a continent, that sort of travel is not happening at the moment, is it? So to get a whole group of players, you know, with support staff, more than 40, 45 people traveling, you know, between countries, that seems really unlikely in the short term. So for the Champions League and the Europa League, there are still hopes that they can get that up and running, finish the season, whenever that might be, in a couple of months down the track, perhaps, and then get back to, say, next season being almost unaffected. It's a little bit wishful at this point, and I think what firstly needs to happen is the domestic leagues need to go to UEFA and say, right, this is what we're doing in our country, and then all the countries can get themselves sorted. Then the Champions League can come back. There's so much water to go under the bridge still because, as we said before, different countries have treated it and had different success with the actual COVID-19 suppression. So it's a long way off. I think it's going to affect football in much the same way that it will affect every single industry. You know, you look at our footy codes back here in Australia, all sport, you know, outside of sport as well, the ramifications, there'll be a knock-on effect for at least a season or two, if not longer. So it'll take a couple of years for the actual seasons to shake out. You consider too the fact that, you know, soccer pretty much never sleeps, does it? So it'll be hard to predict at the moment, but I reckon over the next couple of weeks, we'll get a clearer picture.
So do you think it will be a boost for those leagues that can go? Do you think it'll be a boost for the broadcasters that are broadcasting the leagues around the world that can go?
I think it will for some people. I mean, in terms of a broadcast sense, yeah, people want to watch football, don't they? They want to watch any sport, and that's certainly, a benefit to people that are at home as well and maybe would be lifted by the idea of watching live sport. But there's so much other elements to it, so many other elements to it, particularly in the UK, where a lot of players have said they don't actually want to go back and play. They don't feel comfortable with it. As you mentioned before, some players were coming to the end of a contract with a club. They then want to move somewhere else. That might not be possible. It'll have this knock-on effect to individuals, not just clubs and the wider community of football itself. So, it is going to be really messy. And as I said before, I think to get every stakeholder on the same page with this, it is so difficult at the best of times, and this clearly isn't. And maybe that's a silver lining in itself, that this is such an extraordinary circumstance in the world of sport at the moment, that everybody at least has, the vision of coming together on the one page and actually just deciding what is the best for the sport and what is the best for the community as well. That's maybe a little bit of a utopian view of it, but I think that's the only way you can really look at it when you consider what's happening around the globe.
Yeah, every sport's kind of having the same argument we're having here. And some players, some people involved in those sports and in those teams need to play to eat, to put food on the table, to have a job. Others would say, well, I've got enough money. My health's the most important thing, and I don't want to risk it, even if there's a one in a million chance. I don't really want to risk it. So you've got both ends of the spectrum playing off against each other at the moment around the world.
Yeah, and that's a big one. Also the mental impact on players, because, at the top end in any sport, there are guys that earn really good cash and, they should enjoy what they do, and they maybe don't need to go back to sport, but it's also all they've ever known. So to take that away from them, the mental impact of not doing what you've had in your brain since you were so small, and you've trained for, to be locked inside, even to not be going to training at the moment, with the Premier League as an example, they're trying to get back to training next Monday in small groups, but even that's not confirmed yet. And if they do it, it's going to be very different to what they've done before. It's not going to be training in a big group of 20 plus, it'll be in small groups. That training, these guys are hardwired to go through that process every day, every week to train, let alone to get to the weekend and play in front of 50 or 60,000 people. So it'll affect different players differently. Some have been really vocal and said, look, we're not comfortable, we don't want to play, whereas others, you sense, would absolutely jump at the opportunity. So look, these are the reasons why we need to get sport back as soon as possible if the timing is right.
Richard, great to have a chat to you, and really appreciate you jumping on the line to give our soccer fans an update as to what's happening here and around the world. Thank you.
No worries. Fine. All the best.
Richard Bayliss, Optus Director of Sport. And you can download that Optus Sport app and get all the match details as well if you want to check out the K-League or the Bundesliga in a week's time, maybe a couple of weeks' time, depending on how good they are about getting back to work. A break. More of your calls after the break. On that open line, 1300 736 736 is the number, 1300 736 736. We'll check in with a golf pro or two and talk some more footy. Got an interesting story in the world of footy about going back to zones. And I think it's not such a bad idea to look at. Eddie's been on it for a while, going back to zones. So each club in the AFL has a zone to look after. You can't have first access to the players out of those zones, but it's an area that you're responsible for developing. We'll check that out as well. 1300 736 736 as well. Anything you'd like to chat about in the world of sport next.